Okay. Well, this is our 228th session. It's April 15th. And normally, under normal conditions, our PLCs, we meet every other week, same time, same place. And this cycle, we started out talking about the critical issues in preparation for development of applications for the next round of EPA requests for proposals. We're going to get back to that, but we've kind of been sidetracked, as we all know, by the COVID-19. But what we are going to do is some of that, but in between we want to see how people are coping and try to exchange ideas on what everybody's doing and provide you with information of what we know from what we hear from Washington and share our experiences and see where we can go from now, from the situation we're in to getting our training programs back online. So we always start out with news from Washington, and Heather's our person. Heather, what can you tell us?
All right. Well, I reached out to Washington today, and they just didn't have a ton of new news for us. You know, kind of same things as always, though. You know, make sure that you guys reach out to your regional coordinators. If you have any questions, concerns, any changes, any ideas, you know, don't hesitate to really reach out to your regional coordinators as your main point of contact with those types of things, and just stay safe. You know, that's always the biggest message that we've all been hearing here lately. From the HMTRI side of things, just had a couple of things. One of them, I don't know if you guys saw on the listserv I sent out last week, we actually have a call for photos right now. We're in the process of updating our website, and we would really like to add in some photos from you guys that really represent the work that you guys do and that your students do and different things like that. So if you guys currently have access to any photos and are willing and able to share them with them, just go ahead and send them to me in an email, hkballou@eicc.edu. And then I'll pass them along to our web guy, and he'll kind of look through it and see, you know, which ones kind of fit the pages that he's working on and things like that as well. So we've had a few come in, but if anybody else would be willing to share some photos with us, we would absolutely love that to really kind of jazz up the website some. The other big thing that's been on everybody's mind is the All Grantee meeting, and we're looking at holding that in August. Now, you know, we sort of live in times where things are rapidly changing. So at this point, what we're doing is we're exploring some alternative options for the meeting and, you know, and seeing what things are out there. But what would really help us is if you are interested in participating in an all-grantee meeting, whether it's in person or virtual or something of that sort, can you please reply back to that invite and just go ahead and register yourself with us that you'd be interested in attending the all-grantee meeting? What that does is give us an idea of folks that are kind of interested, so the number of people. We also have a spot in there where you could add in any topics that you're interested in. That type of information would be really helpful for us as we go forward to continuing to build our plan and what things are looking like. I would encourage you guys to just stop at that point. Don't make any other arrangements that are indicated in that invite letter, but just go ahead and let us know if you are interested in participating in the All Grantee meeting, and then we'll build out from there, and we'll keep you guys informed as we come up with some more decisions on what exactly that event is going to look like. It might be something a little different than what we've held in the past, just in response to where things are at right now. But we would really just appreciate hearing from you guys who would be looking at attending. Again, you can also send that to me at hkballou@eicc.edu. Mike, is there something else I'm missing, or did I touch on all the things we discussed today?
No, that's great. During this really bizarro period we're experiencing, we're trying to keep all our options open. So any ideas you have on the all-grantee meeting, we really like this program because it gives everyone a chance to get together and network and exchange ideas. Things may not be possible. We may not be able to travel. These restrictions may be in place. So we're thinking positive, but we're definitely looking at plan Bs, whether it's a gigantic Zoom meeting or a series of Zoom meetings, whether it's some sort of a bunch of webinars. If you have some ideas or things that have worked well for you, send them on to Heather. because everybody's idea is a good one, and we can to get into the, some of these issues and talk to people in our regions and people in D.C. and kind of sort out some of the problems we're all having and work them through. So we're going to do it one way or another. And, of course, by signing up, there's no commitment. There's no money commitment. There's no commitment to attend or anything. We're just early on those planning stages. So keep that in mind. During this really strange period, what we're going to be doing is trying to get an idea of what everyone is doing and how they're handling it. And, of course, so many of what we do is there are external conditions that are impacting our programs, nothing that we have power over. It could be our organization. It could be our mayor, our governor that is dictating what we can do, how we can gather, what we can do, and even our personal feelings about how we get through this. So we're kind of in this mode of responding to externalities rather than really being able to dictate. So the idea is let's move forward, try to keep our programs intact, keep our people intact. We're going to talk about that today. And, of course, any of you who are current grantees and you have grant concerns, go to your regional coordinator. That's your best friend, and we have them in the notes. If you are not getting notes, just put your send your contact information to Heather. Do you want to repeat that, Heather?
Absolutely. It is hkballou@eicc.edu.
Okay. Send your, if you have a friend or someone who wants to get the notes, wants to get the invite, send them to her. If you're getting these notes and you just have a comment or some suggestions or how we could improve what we're doing, just send them, just respond to the notes and we'll get them. So again, any ideas, success stories, send them to Heather or just do a reply on the notes that you'll get on Friday of this particular meeting. The next thing we usually talk about is questions that people might have or comments from the last session. And Ken from Recycle Force, and I'm glad we've got someone from Recycle Force on. Is Ken on?
Yeah, I'm here. How you doing, Mike?
Oh, Ken, good. You had a question, and I thought it was an excellent question. Do you remember that, or do you want me to reiterate it?
I vaguely remember it. I was kind of concerned about, you know, after this whole COVID-19 is over with, is there any movement with Washington, D.C. to kind of use the people that we've already got trained in HAZWOPRA and RECRA as a, you know, as a reference source to start cleanup, being that this population that most of us serve is on the bottom end of the employment spectrum. It'd be a good time for a movement to help them get into some type of employment, if not permanent employment. I think that was the question I had.
That was, and it was a good one. What can we do? And this is a timely question, and it's one that has bounced around for, I would say, almost decades. We've always approached EPA, and the assistant administrator actually has gotten into this of how do we express to our states and to our counties that we have a resource that may be very valuable to them. And we've talked about this issue in terms of first source hiring. We're trying to promote first source hiring where you would look at environmental job training programs first locally before, and you would get credits in the municipality for your hiring of local trained people. We've looked at that. We've looked at encouragement in terms of the TAB, the MAC grants. These are the assessment cleanup revolving phone grants to recommend to their contractors that they look at environmental workforce development programs. And we've done this on and off over the years. It's had some success. We've brought it up with ICMA, the County Managers Association, to look at our graduates. And, of course, I think it's something we have to keep working on. We need to be more, make people aware of our graduates. And, of course, we've been trying also to do that with our, we call it Certified Employee Finder, where we try to find out which programs are graduating students and when they're graduating and what certificates they might have. I think we can work on that some more, and if someone's got some good ideas, anything we can do to reach out to these employers. Now, we do acknowledge, and this is brought up to us from people in EPA, that many of these jobs are on the local level. EPA can try to encourage, and we encourage Dave and Rachel to, when they go to these other meetings, to mention our program. We try to work with TAB as closely as we can. This is a technical assistance to brownfields. That's the technical end. We cover the nation on the job training end, and there's four grantees that cover it on the technical end. We try to work with them, and of course, when you read the notes, you'll read about seminars that they put on, and we always try to make a connection. In fact, in their RFP, they've been successful that they need to interact with our job training programs, and when we get further along in this cohort of PLC calls, one of the things that they get points for is working with people like us that have graduates and outreach. Part of their outreach to community is outreaching to the job training program, and we will always encourage, when they're writing their grants, to look at what the job training people are doing. In fact, we'll put in the notes, there's a webinar coming up at the end of April. It's for the TAB grantees, but it's titled Getting Ready for the Next TAB, the next RFP for Assessment Cleanup Pilots. So they have a very similar grant program to ours, and they give out quite a few, many more grants than we give out, but we want to be aware, and I'll include those sessions in the notes, of how you can be aware of what the assessment and cleanup people are doing. Now, those grantees aren't necessarily going to be people that will hire in your people, but they'll be working with the contractors, and they'll be knowledgeable of the people who are doing the contract work in your community, and they can relay on to them that there is a brownfields training program in your community, and you really need to keep in touch with them to get points on their applications for federal funding. Now let's get right down to Ken's idea of, we've got graduates and they've got training that's very valuable, primarily the 1910-120. They can don and doff suits and they know how to do it, which not a lot of people do know. How do we use these people and how can we put them to work? Now, I know, and I think Janet brought up last session, that there are some institutional issues, things like it takes time to bring someone on. Another issue might be the presence of PPE. People may need people, but they don't have the protective equipment. Now, some of your programs may have some of this protective equipment, and they may be able to volunteer it. So the question is, if we have some graduates, and they may be past graduates, or they may have been halfway through your course, and they've had 1910-120, and they're really capable, how can you get the word spread locally that you've got some people that are interested and capable of helping you train your people? And they may be doing direct training. They may be doing direct work, and they may be – yes. Okay. Someone – they may be actually – sanitizing buses, they may be working in the field, in which case you may have your placements early before they've even graduated. They may say, anyone with 1910-120, we'd like to interview them and hire them. That's one thing. May not be so great for the program because you'd like them to go through graduation, but that's been done in the past when Hurricane Katrina came through, many of our program, and with the fires in California, many of our participants were hired before they finished training. They needed people with 1910-120 and some of the skills that they had. This is a possibility. Now, how do you get the word out? Well, clearly, as we've talked before, and I think Rochester has done a great job because they're pretty much involved with this, the local government. They are able to access, and they know who the city contractors are, and they can actually go into those city contractors and say, this is the program. I don't know if you're aware about it, but we've got people that have PPE training. They know how to don and doff these suits. They could probably train some of your people. Are you interested? And so they have names and contact numbers. Now, not most of our grantees may not have that inside information into City Hall. So now you have to do a little digging. And this isn't the worst time to start trying to find out who would be the person to contact. Now, they're going to be, there's a good chance that a lot of these local governments are going to be getting some stimulus money. So that is also something to consider, that you've got to get somehow, the question is, how do you get your name out to the people that may be able to say, we're looking for people to do training, or we're looking people to do work, and it sounds like you may have some. Let's get together. Let's talk about this. And that's where we want to go. Your best chance, trying to use federal programs is very long and precarious. They're good at basically bully pulpit, encouraging people to do things. As you move towards the local level, it gets easier and easier, depending on the size of your communities. Of course, large municipalities are often difficult to work with, but the smaller you get, the easier it is to contact the city manager, and he would be the one to contact as a first place to try to get some information of who you might contact. Call the city manager and say, we've got people and they are familiar with working with hazardous materials. Could you direct me to who I might contact that might be interested in these people, either part-time, as volunteers, or as trainers? And that's the direction you want to go to. I would suggest one other thing, and this is going from very large general federal government down to more specific local government. I would go one step further, and I would start contacting some of the local businesses that are still open. The Home Depot, the local food store, whether it's Kroger, whether it's a material handler or Amazon, and I would go to try to find a contact with the HR department, contact them and say, explain what your program is doing, and you've got people who are trained and certified in working with hazardous materials. Is there any interest in your organization for working with these people either on a part-time or a full-time basis? And you might be surprised. And you get down to local stores and they're priding themselves. We have a local heating and air conditioning man, and he's advertising all day long how well he sanitizes the equipment they work with. And there aren't as many experts around, and we have them, and they've been trained in. And the key word is they're trained and certified. So if you have people that have 1910-120, I would start, and you might even start and work your way up rather than working your way down. Call some local firms and go locally and see larger, someone like a Kroger, or we're here down here in Food Lion, or whatever your local food chains are, and tell them you've got some people. Maybe the only challenge might be is you're going to have to convince your students that they don't leave the program, that it's more in their best interest. And we're going to talk about that, of coming back and completing the rest of the program. Has anyone had any success with placing? Now, I know Ken has been doing a lot of work. Well, let's go around the phone here. And I'd like to get an idea of what everyone's doing. Are we just standing still, which may be what most of us are doing, or some of you? Could we kind of go around the room? I know it's going to be tricky. Everyone might want to talk at first, but why don't I leave the mic open here and see what everyone's doing at this point, or what they're doing. And that may range from we're just at a standstill because we don't have phone contact with our students. We're doing some remote training. We're actually doing some distance training. Can we go around the room?
Let me start real quick so I can finish the question there as well, or the comment anyway. You know, this is Ken at Recycle Forest Indianapolis. We are open, and I think I mentioned that before, that we have relationship with the city and also the Department of Public Works doing trash pickup, and we're taking in hazardous waste. So we're recognized as an essential employer, and we're also continuing our training, our HAZWOPER training, our RECWA training, and we're physically taking in people from the homeless community, panhandler community, because they don't have housing during this time, and we're providing employment and training and putting them on our crew as well to do cleanup. So, you know, part of my question was, you know, to see if there's any movement on a national level, although we are definitely still creating relationships with the city and state and the local level, let them know that we're here so that, you know, so that when this whole thing is over, we can hopefully can move our people into cleanup jobs. So that's what we're doing now.
That is awesome. And you may at some point, and I think you already have, but you may do what L.A. Conservation Corps. Is anyone on from L.A.? L.A. has got some large contracts with the county to do cleanup, and they're on their road to sustainability, where they're doing a great job in allowing them to expand their program to do all sorts of work for the county in terms of cleanup, some of the issues. I think you're doing more towards the hazardous materials, but they're doing all kinds of work in that area. And I guess the question is, as you operate, to the extent that you could now formalize that into some maybe some more institutional relationships with Indianapolis, where they're funding you perhaps some X dollars a year to do more of that type of work. I think you're already doing some of that, aren't you, Ken?
Yes, we are. We are. We're just trying to, you know, trying to connect the dots, cross the T's, and dot the I's. But, yeah, we are.
Anyone else? Uberl, you were going right on with everything in terms of your recruitment process. Are you still in that mode, or have you found you've had to change your operation a little bit?
We're still in that mode. We actually just got approved. Our cooperative agreement just came in a few days ago from the EPA. So now we officially have the go-ahead to start to recruit. So we're sticking with all that virtual recruitment using our programs that are already in existence, which cover 4,000 people in the county. And then actually you talking earlier was a really good refresher to make sure I add all of our local municipalities to my virtual recruitment list. So I appreciated that reminder because I was able to put that to my to-do list. So we're sticking with everything that we've been doing.
This is Pam at ECA in Philadelphia. We're not permitted to weatherize homes. We're not allowed into homes to weatherize right now. So that part of our staff is laid off temporarily. We do have an okay from the City of Philadelphia to do heater repair and replacement on an emergency basis. So our hotline team is smaller, and they're working staggered shifts to do calls and employ people. Training, we're using this time to go online. Like this, so we were able to change some of the programs that were already happening when this started. We were able in a week or two to quickly shift to an online platform. And now we're working on doing that with our other training programs.
Excellent. What I like while we have Pam on, I really like your fundraising operation, and I get it. I will probably post one of your recent fundraising. This is a great time for those of you who may not even be doing fundraising. I think the great grantees take the EPA money, but they're doing their own fundraising. And it reminds me way back when with JFY that was looking to apply for an EPA grant, and I suggested they do this. They say, well, we've been working on philanthropic money for a long time, and they were operating 100% the other way and had a big philanthropic approach going. And while you have some downtime, And, of course, it depends if you have some web people around and you've got ways of setting that up. You might start pushing on the donations because there are a lot of people out there that at this point in time want to help. And if they see what your program's doing, they may be very happy to do that. Pam, what is your feeling about your fundraising? You've been very successful on not necessarily going online to large quantities of people, but with your center, you've been very active in fundraising, and it sounds like it's paid off for you.
We've been really lucky. JCI has a really big presence in our area, Johnson Controls, the HVAC company, and they were looking for another training partner because they're facing this enormous retirement of the baby boomers where they're, especially the heating technicians, like the more technical side of that business. So they came to us and we created a partnership so that we could train returning citizens to do that kind of work. We can't get the returning citizens into homes, depending on what the record of the person has been, but definitely in commercial work we can. And there's like three phases of the program. One is maintenance. The next phase is more, it gets to be a little more technical, a little more hands-on beyond the everyday. And then the third level is somebody with a pretty high level diagnostic ability. And we're just loving that program because then the men and women in that program, they have a really good job. If they complete successfully, they have really good job connections to move into employment.
And you've got one of the best training centers in the country because of a donation, which is incredible.
The Knight Foundation.
Right.
We're in a 58,000 square foot warehouse in North Philly, and it was built in like 1850. So we run the weatherization operation on the first floor. On the second floor, we do the training. And say about 28,000 square feet. We were able, with this amazing grant from Knight, like Knight Ritter, the Knight Foundation, to take it to LEED Gold. So we have rainwater collection, super insulation with this drywall that a local manufacturer wanted us to try out. So people literally, when they're walking around the training center, they see stuff in action. They see energy efficiency, high efficiency lighting, heating, all in action. And there's classrooms, but there's a whole lot of hands-on space where students build a house, and then when they graduate, they have to take the house apart for the next class. Like, there's a lot of space so people can actually do hands-on.
This is a great time to look at your fundraising operations. And I say that thinking way ahead. In all likelihood, we know EPA said that they would extend these grants, but they won't necessarily extend the money. They haven't said anything about that. So I don't think we should rely on that. Now, that may be a gift, but I wouldn't even begin to say, usually there are no cost extensions. So one black swan that we may be talking about a year or two from now is that we extended the program. We were able to delay everything, but we still paid our salaries and we did work. And so we're short on funds as we go further on. So that it's something to consider. And to the extent that you can get someone locally to help fund your operations, you're going to be way ahead of the game. Plus, that's discretionary money, and often you can spend it any way you want. It's really a blessing to have a major company in your area supporting you. And that may be a power company. In the case of California, PG&E provided lots of support to the grantees out there. It may be a philanthropic, a family foundation or a family office, or maybe an individual who's willing to support your cause. Some other ideas of people out there? Are we finding we just have to stop operations at this point?
Hello, Michael. This is Paul with Recycle Force.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to piggyback on to some things that Ken mentioned. As he shared, we're continuing, and today we have approximately about 40 on the clock. And in addition to that, we had partnerships within our local community that we serve. And the prior week, we had an opportunity to fill both of our 26-footers with food and help distribute those to the local community that were in need. So there's a lot of opportunities to help locally, especially, you know, serving the population that we do. So that's very, very encouraging that we had an opportunity to do that.
Hey,
some of our grant.
That's absolutely right. Oh, yes, there's so many things that we're doing. But thanks, Paul, for mentioning that. That's been so powerful in the community.
You really need to document those things. And, in fact, to the extent you could send some of those to Heather on a picture or two, it would be great. And the reason I say it's important to document that is thinking ahead on re-upping. We always like to think ahead because we forget these things. Some programs actually have volunteerism built into their programs, and they require their students to do some volunteer work, and they actually consider it as a course, as a life skills training opportunity. And you might even take that and formalize it, and certainly write it up, but formalize it into volunteerism as part of your program. And you could use that as a selling point for securing philanthropic funds, actually securing grants in the future. It's so easy to do these things and then just forget about them. And because you're doing them because you're just who you are. But that means a lot to your supporters, and it's great that you're doing that.
Okay. Thank you.
Some other ideas that people have found during this difficult period? Well, I know, and I want to thank you for the contributions you all sent us, and keep sending them in on what you're doing now, if your status had changed, particularly if you responded to the questionnaire we sent out before the scan we did. It might be we're shut down. And those of you, we've heard some amazing stories today, but these are exemplary examples. Many of us are just shut down, and it's no fault of our own. We have no control over it. Our organization said, no, you can't even come into the building. Our students have no phones. We are not computer literate. Unless you started online training before this hard started, it is next to impossible to get it going. I know Janet, she wrote us and said, I can't be on the call today because I'm trying to get an online class going, which is very difficult if you've never had an online class. So don't feel that you're an outlier. We've got 40 grantees, and we've heard about three awesome examples, and there are some others out there, but we've got many people who are just in a very difficult situation right now. And what we have to do is try to get through that. And of course, the first line, as I said earlier, is get in touch with your regional coordinator, because they're your best friend in getting through this. They have the best information in terms of EPA grant extensions, what situations may be, and how you may move forward. We look at these three cases. We got those of you who are prospective grantees who are thinking of submitting a grant, and we're going to be talking about it because we kind of used up our time already, but that we're going to talk about today. But we've got prospective grantees who are going to be responding to the next RFP, and these may be re-ups, people who have had grants before, or they want to they want to get funded this round, which they're talking about summer in terms of next RFP coming out. It was, we kind of moved from early summer to summer, whatever that means. I think EPA wants to keep their options a little open, but it's imminent and it's happening, but it'll be summer. And through these PLC calls, we're going to be addressing that. But we have some time, and we're going to be talking about how you can write the best RFP, a response to the RFP ever. We'll be talking about that. But the prospective grantees, that's more in the planning stages. We're going to be talking about that. And you may be wanting to do things like distance learning in your proposal, bringing down your class sizes. You may have to consider small class sizes under 10. You know, we don't know how things are going to look in the beginning, when the training would begin of next year. It'll be January of 2021 for the new grantees, the new grantees. So there might be some things there. You may want to, as we open up, consider reworking your work plan, and we'll talk about that at a future call. Those of you who are in the recruiting and screening, we've talked, I think Uberall is doing an awesome job, and they're moving on with their screening and accepting their applicants, and so they have time to do a really thorough job of lining up their next class. Perhaps their next challenge might be keeping those students engaged until their training can begin, and they may have to, as they recruit students, look to people who have tablets or people who have computers and are willing to do some training online, even though they may not be familiar with it. Maybe they'll be willing to participate in Zoom, and that may become part of their screening process. Would you be willing to, in our early classes, work with Zoom? And we'll talk about these things in the future. So we've got that second group of the people who are in their recruiting plan. And then we've got the third group, which is the most troubling, and I was hoping to talk about that today, but we'll have to do that on the next call or another call. The one that I'm most concerned with is the mid-training. You're halfway through your program. You've got the EPA grant. You've done maybe life skills training, maybe not. You've done 1910, 120, maybe not. Maybe you're two-thirds of the way through the program. What do you do? What do you do? How do you keep your students engaged? Will they come back? Do you just tell them? And again, Recycle Force here is a star. They're able to. They've figured out a way of doing this. But what do you do when you have no contact with your students that are halfway through? Are you going to help them get a temp job? Are you going to try to keep a carrot in front of them that they'd say, I've got to find work, but I want to come back. How do you maneuver that? And that kind of segues into the last group that we want to address, is those of you who have finished a program and you have some students who haven't been placed yet. And the interesting that came up in a previous call was, I've got students that graduated and are coming back looking for work. They're coming back to me and saying, I got the certs. I went through your program. I was laid off. Can you help me? And that would be included in that same group as those who are just graduated. You finished a cohort, or you've got some people left over from a cohort, previous cohort, and you got to go into the placement. So we want to address those. And any of you have some ideas, we're really open to those, so we could share them on what you can do in those particular cases. And we're going to be talking about maybe working with internships, doing the volunteerism as we talked about today, doing some temp work. You may be able to find a temp service. Temp work would be an ideal situation for those of you who have graduates halfway through the program, where they're part-time jobs, but they're not going to be permanent. And it might be getting them a job at Amazon that has nothing to do with environmental workforce, but it has to do with some life skills training they received. And Amazon is looking for part-time workers to get them through this crunch, but not necessarily in full-time employment. And to the extent you could develop a relationship with Amazon or a Costco or a store that's really desperately looking for people, or Walmart that says, I've got people that I want some temporary employment for, not necessarily full-time, permanent jobs, although you may lose them once they go to work there. But then you can match those with your students that are in class now and say, we've got an opportunity for you. I know times are tough and you need money and you need to get a job. I want you to stay with this program, but I think I could connect you with Amazon, or I can connect you with Costco or Walmart to get some temp work. And I know this is out of your wheelhouse. You're supposed to be working on environmental job development, but what I'm talking about is keeping your students in your program. So what I'm talking about is setting up a program for those who are not employed that could get some temporary employment, whether it's work study or whether it's internship, with the understanding that when you start coming back, they could come back to their program and finish up their credentials and become more valuable than they were before that happened, and seek permanent employment in the environmental workforce area. So we want to examine these things and kind of share ideas. And again, any of you who have some ideas or suggestions, what we're interested in is sharing these ideas for those of you who have tried them to see what works and what doesn't. Anyone go ahead.
Just remind folks is, you know, we realize that people's response and people's ability to respond to this situation will vary from state to state, county to county, city to city, depending on whatever your local restrictions are and local rules are. And that's one of the interesting thing I think about hearing bits of what people are doing from around the nation, like you guys are, is that, you know, everybody's kind of, we're all in the same boat, but we might be on different parts of the boat. And we know that some of these things, some of the rules and regulations will vary from place to place. So as you guys are looking at, you know, if any of these discussions inspire good ideas on your parts as well, we do remind you, always look to your local rules and regulations first as well in terms of stay-at-home orders or anything like that. So just keep that in mind.
Well, I'll tell you what we're doing. We're struggling. We're HMTRI. I'm in North Carolina. Heather's in Iowa, and Steve is in Charleston. So we're trying to figure out how to use Zoom. We struggled with it this morning, and just for our internal communications, to keep our team in sync, we basically were using just conference calls, and we're trying to develop our skills, and not that we're going to use it. We find that this while free conference call has its detractors, it seems to be easy to use, but we want to see what we can do in terms of our internal communications among our people. Maybe Zoom is better. Maybe it's not as good as just a conference call. So we're kind of experimenting with that. What are you all using? Would anyone have anything that seems to work for them?
We use Zoom. It seems to be pretty functional. It depends on how many people it is. You can get like free aid or either pay for more, but Zoom seems to work out okay.
We're using Zoom too, and Canvas. We're working on Canvas for some of the remote learning.
Canvas? Is that?
Canvas.
Okay, Canvas. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're experimenting with that to maybe deliver courses in the future, or?
That's what we're trying. That's what our instructors are playing with right now. They're trying to see if they can go that route.
Excellent.
We did, when we had to switch fast, we used Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest problem is our students don't have access. Our students, you know, so. It is great, but a lot of people are cut out, and they're the people that we care about the most.
Yeah, I think that's an issue, is if some of the grantees responded, we don't have computers, we don't have internet, and some of our students even have phones. So where are we going? You know, where are we going with this? And, you know, you start backing up and, well, maybe more have Facebook. You work with what you have and what your participants are willing to use. A lot of our grantees have signed up, kind of a prerequisite once they get into the courses, to get establish a Facebook page. So maybe that's the first place to work, you know, to try to keep your team together. And then if you could do massive conference calls like we're doing here, which is, if it's nothing else, if you have the phone numbers of everybody and you can get a free conference call going, you could team building, and we'll be talking about retention, I guess, next time. But we'll, if you could keep your, one of the biggest things on retention is team building. If you could get your participants to bond so they know each other from previous courses, they remember when they were recruited together, they're in the same class, they're going to come back more likely than if they don't. So that to the extent that you could even get everyone on a conference call just to say hello, hey, we just want to keep you all up to date. This is where we're going. We're not sure when this, how this is going to end. And it gives you a place to build. Hopefully they'll stick with you and or decide to come back when we get past this. So, yeah, you work with what you have. And, any other comments? Well, we don't want to keep everyone too long, and I'm going to put in the notes some things you might want to go to. There's some great NIHS sites. It is a good time to just, when you've got to tell the kids, hey, I got some work to do, you could go to one of these sites and immerse yourself in what's happening at NIHS, what's happening with the TAB people. You can, and I'll repeat it because I think I put it in previous notes. Last year's RFP, for those of you who are thinking of re-upping, there's some great, there's a slides from last year's RFP and a Q&A session to get you going on just what's happening. And it's a good time to just visit these sites and see what's, get yourself up to speed. And like I say, what we're doing is just experimenting with platforms that we might be able to use and trying to figure out ways of keeping in touch with everybody. That's the main thing.
This is Andrea in Kansas City. Can Heather say her email again?
Absolutely. It is hkballou@eicc.edu, Eastern Iowa Community Colleges, eicc.edu.
Thank you.
Some of you, when we send the notes out, we get rejects. So if you don't get notes, send your contact information. Sometimes we send them out in mass, so sometimes we get bonged because we're as junk mail or whatever. We try to keep resending them. Sometimes they go through, sometimes they don't. If you're not getting them, just drop your contact information to Heather. We also post them on the toolbox. Heather, do you want to tell them about the toolbox real quick before we end?
Absolutely. So we have a fantastic repository for all things workforce related in our toolbox, and that is brownfields-toolbox.org. It's our website. And if you go there, you will see lots of really good information that can really help you guys along the way. For those of you that have found yourselves with time to start thinking ahead about the next RFP, which we hope you guys are. There's a couple of great sections that you would like to look at. One is called Start a Program. You'll see the tab in the upper part of the website. Start a Program. If you click on that, it's going to take you to a page that has an introduction. But if you look to the right, you will see a whole bunch of boxes going down.
Yeah, buddy, sorry I'm late.
All of the different things that you can do, the different program components, lots of fantastic information on there. So click on those drop-down boxes to the right, and you will get just endless amount of information you can look at. Another thing to look at is the Brownfields Best Practices. If you go to the Downloads tab, you can find that on there. Those are the 8 critical components for developing a strong environmental workforce development and job training program. That's a publication that HMTRI put out maybe about 2 years ago now. Really great one. There's also something else that might be of interest to you guys, especially those that are maybe new to this, might be the social media directory and even Certified Employee Finder. It's a great way to see what programs are doing around the nation. It's got some really fantastic information on that. And thank you to those that responded to our scan earlier in this year, so we were able to update that.
Another component that I think Mike was referencing that might be of interest to you is all the way on the far right of the website, there's something that's called PLC sessions. So if you click on that section, you can find recordings and notes for just about all the 27, this is probably 228 PLC sessions that have been held. So if you want to go back and look at any of the past notes and recordings, you can explore on that as well. And again, you can find all of this on brownfields-toolbox.org.
All right, great.
Well, we will pick this up again on the 29th and see where we're going 2 weeks from now. Buddy, I'm sorry we missed you today, but maybe tune in on the 29th and we'd like to hear what you all are doing up there.
Well, we haven't started much at all because of what's going on. And the reason why I'm late is because there's so much going on that we're dealing with in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
So it's been a really trying time for us here over the last couple of weeks.
This is
but
tough.
I'm sure everybody's doing their thing, and I just wanted to at least make sure that I called in anyhow.
I'm glad you did, and it's tough for everyone. We're all in the same boat. And I think the one thing, word of encouragement is for everybody, is we're all just trying to hang in there and figure out how we can get through this. And hopefully as more information becomes available, we can share some ideas and get through this thing together. So,
stay healthy and stay at home.
Same to all of you, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Same time, same place.
Bye.
Okay. Bye. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.